Well, I hope everything is working out there. This is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and I'm the net control operator for this Alimar Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m., and so it's Sunday night, and it's 8 p.m. This is our Eastern Standard Time edition of Alimar Technical Net. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you the usual links I like you to keep in mind. Okay, well, if you cannot reach me via the radio, email is the best course. That would be either for mailbag questions, questions that you can't ask through the radio because you can't reach us on the radio, or if you have any topics you would like to discuss or you would like to enter into a discussion with or hear a discussion of, or if you have any puzzles that you'd like to share. I'm always looking out for some technical puzzles that aim to drive, little bits and pieces of physics and electronics and ham radio and such that we sort of take for granted that we know all that stuff. So those puzzles are always useful. Very difficult to find the right type, but if you have them out there, please share. Also, if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a space or a NASA-related situation on the web or YouTube, also, you can reach him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. So that's that. I have a link page. I have a link page full of the links. Some of them are not really verbal. They're more visual, or they're YouTubes, or they're on interesting subjects that I've found throughout the week. Also, a list of interesting science articles that I might discuss if we have time for the science talk later on tonight. So the links are available 24/7. You type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to my link page. We have a chat room available. You can either go to Limark's webpage and follow the links to the chat room, or you can just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. Also, I stream audio of the Technical Net 24/7, so if you're out of radio range or you don't have a handy talkie on you, but you have a cell phone that has internet access, just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you a stream of the Glen Oaks repeater, W2BL. Also, I'd like to remind people of Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive of these technical nets going as far back as December of 2006. His site is amateurradio.tv. It's been visited by over a million visitors, so please avail yourself of it. There's a lot of wisdom from amateur radio operators who passed through the technical nets. Some, unfortunately, have become silent keys. Let me drop for a second. Okay, tonight's plan is as per usual. We will take questions of a technical nature. I will write down people's first name and call sign, and we'll try to address these questions in an orderly fashion. First person, you know, who signs up, first person gets to ask the question, and we go down the list. If we have further time, we will open the questions to general science and medical topics. We do not treat or diagnose over the radio, but general discussions of medicine and any science in general, I'm always up for it. We can try and discuss it. So hopefully I know some things. Hopefully other people listening in can share their wisdom as well. That should take us, we might have some extra time. We might do some science talk articles. We'll see how that goes. It'll take us to around 10:15. And Paul will give us the SpaceNet report. That will take us to about 11 o'clock p.m. when I will come back, tie a bow on it, wish you all well, and call it a week. So that's the plan if the repeater and the radios and the computers and everything works out the way they're supposed to. So I will drop right now and ask anyone who has a question of a technical nature to please give me their first name and their call sign.
I kind of have something science related. 82 OGB.
All great, here we go. KG2RY, David. Good evening, I have some technical questions. W. Curtis, supporting the net.
K1AMR, supporting the net.
Which is the email, I don't know if you got it, terahertz versus infrared.
KD2UAH, supporting the net.
Okay, very good. I have Craig with hopefully a scientific question, David with a question, Curtis supporting us, Jonathan supporting us, thank you both, AKH supporting us, and Wesley with a question. Anyone else with a question tonight, if they would like to put their name on the list, just hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign.
WB2GX, I'm trying to support the net, but everyone is taller than me and my feet don't reach the floor.
Well, Rich, thank you for supporting the net. I do appreciate it.
Jim, KD2VHD.
Yes, VHD. Do you have a question tonight, or is just supporting the net?
We'll see how it goes. I'm supporting so far.
KD2UAH, question.
Okay, UAH, you have a question. You're on the list. I think we'll start working down the list. Craig, what is your possibly science-related question?
All right, sample this. So, this morning, I'm on my way to work, and I have like more than an hour before I have to get started.
Is there any way you could boost your power? Because portions that you dropped completely out of the repeater and others were about 95% noise.
I don't have really any other room that I could stand, but I just moved a couple of feet. How about now?
Okay, that's a little bit better.
Okay, so sample this. So I'm on my way to work this morning, and I needed a little bit more sleep. And I probably maybe slept for maybe like an hour to an hour and a half. Now, around maybe 50 minutes in, right before I was about to probably wake up, it almost felt like that I was locked into my sleep and I couldn't almost wake up at all.
Okay, you want to know if that's a common situation? Or what about that you're curious about?
In science, what would that usually, like, feel like? Like, what would probably, like, cause that? Because it almost felt like I just couldn't wake up.
Okay. Other than sleeping sickness and weird things like that, there's no clinically documented case of people falling to sleep and being unable to be woken from a sleep. There is, unfortunately, a congenital abnormality that gets worse over years in which some people lose the ability to actually have a good night's sleep, and unfortunately it has disastrous physiological effects. We need sleep in order to kind of reset our brains, clean things up, shuttle short-term memory into moderate, medium-term and medium into long-term and stuff like that. But most likely that's just some kind of strange, type of sensation that's more alarming than accurate, akin to, I'm sure you've experienced times where you suddenly, when you're half asleep, have this sense that you're falling and you sort of grab at the mattress and you weren't falling. It was just some interesting little kink in our neurological system. So it was probably just your brain hiccuping. I don't think there's anything physiologically that could manifest in that particular way.
Hypnagogia.
What again, Wesley? I mean, there are cases of sleeping sickness There are cases of people falling to sleep at odd times during activity in the car and such, but just kind of being locked in sleep, not really. I mean, there's neurological disastrous disorders called lock-in in which you're basically paralyzed, but you're not asleep. So what exactly were you citing, Wesley?
Hop and I go, Joe. Do you know what it is?
KD2FYU.
Do you know what it is?
1 second, Wesley. What do you want to say, George?
Yeah, you were still sleeping, and you were beginning to dream that you wanted to wake up. It was the entire beginning of the REM cycle. So you were actually interrupting falling asleep and or falling out of sleep.
Dr. Habnagoja, do you know what it is?
Okay, Jeff, it's a transitional state between consciousness and sleep. I think it sounded, although, that Craig it was probably just cycling. I think it's more akin to what George was suggesting. We cycle in and out of REM sleep throughout the night, and sometimes there are little bumps in the road, and you could have some degree of alertness while a lot of your brain is trying to shift it back into REM mode, and you get these kind of false signals. But again, there's no real disease in which you get trapped into sleep. There are diseases, sleeping sickness and such, which are more comas than they are regular sleep with REM stages and dreams and such.
Roy?
Roy, it's actually stages of sleep that is required. KD2FYU? And I'll just be listening. Thank you, Roy.
Roy?
Yeah, we'll get to you in a second, Wesley. I just want to respond to George. Yes, they are stages in a standard way of sleeping. We cycle in and out of REM sleep. There are a series of stages of sleep. REM is the rapid eye movement that you can see in your partner sometimes. They show it with electroencephalograms. This is the period of time where dreaming is the most intense. If you wake people during REM sleep, they can better explain to you what they were dreaming about. If you wait past REM sleep, the brain doesn't really record our dreams as much as we think they do. Only usually when we wake up soon after the REM cycle can we retain small patches of the memory of our dreams. So, Wesley, what would you like to say?
I was asking you, do you know what it is?
Yes, it's a transitional state of consciousness between wakefulness and sleep.
Right. Opposite to hypnagogia. So 70% of the people experience those hallucinations, which can appear in form of sight, sounds, or even physical movement. Nothing strange. I didn't find in it anything special, anything abnormal. And to actually.
I agree with you, Wesley, and I mentioned that one of the many, much more common. I mean, that's kind of an uncommon sensation as far as I'm aware. One of the more usual sensations that most people have experienced is the sense of falling that they feel during those stages.
Right. Not a professional in this area, but I happen to have a classes a long time ago with mandatory classes on psychology. But I have some text to actually help me formulate better my thoughts on, I'm using the word in front. So neurons in your brain communicate with each other through bursts of electrical activity. This electrical activity can be measured in waves with a machine called electrocephalograph. how to say it, but it's yellow. Okay. But anyhow, it's written, when you wake, your brain produces measurable alpha and beta waves, with beta waves being dominant. Once you become drowsy, alpha wakes you over. And then there is a lightest form of sleep, 1 minute to 5 minutes before you wake up. During this stage, alpha waves drop to less than 50% of your total brain waves, and researchers can observe ripples of slower theta waves. And hypnagogia occurs during the transitional period of wakefulness to sleep, when the alpha waves are decreasing, but you still haven't reached the first state of sleep. In other words, it's like some of dreams are so real. So you think you already woke up, and you may think that you are already woke up, but you're still sleeping, and you're gonna be wake up. So in your dream, you already wake up, and you're waking up again. Sometimes kind of surprising. Anyhow, thank you.
GP, come to think of it, I've actually been dreaming a lot this week, and for some reason I can actually recall what these dreams were about, since 9 times out of 10, like, the first 10 minutes, usually we just forget about the dream.
Yeah, it has to do with when you're waking up. If you wake up anywhere near your REM cycle, you'll remember your dreams. If they're very vivid and somewhat traumatic, you might retain them. If you continue sleeping beyond the REM cycle and way past it, most of the time we tend to forget. There's a lot of people out there who say that they don't dream. Most likely it's not that they don't dream. It's just that they are not good at recovering the memories, because it's sort of the record button is turned off along with a lot of other things during sleep cycles. But Wesley, you're thinking of an electroencephalogram. I mentioned that somewhat earlier in this discussion. They've been researching electroencephalograms for different states of thought for many, many years. Lately, they've kind of gravitated to functional MRIs for imaging where things are taking place within the brain. But electroencephalograms are good for judging brain death and for different stages of awakeness.
Yes. Excuse me. My guess is that when I dream, sometimes... when I feel like that I am dreaming, I almost can't wait until something pops my head saying, hey, what are you doing?
Okay, we have all kinds of interesting reactions to dreams. Wesley mentioned the dream within a dream within a dream, which is kind of cliched almost in horror movies, where terrible things happen only to have the main character wake up from a nightmare into another nightmare, and sometimes into another nightmare. But we have that. There are sometimes I will kind of realize that stuff going on doesn't make too much sense. One of the things that's the first to go in dreams, some people might notice, is your ability to be critical, thinking critically, kind of gets turned down real low. So if you start to fly, a lot of times you don't put two and two together and come up with the idea that this ain't reality. So sometimes that kind of strikes me in the middle of a dream, and I kind of assess what's been going on and come to the conclusion that this is not consistent with reality as I know it, so I must be in a dream. Sometimes when you feel that way, you're really close to the end of it anyway, and you can knock yourself into consciousness. I think sometimes when you're in the middle of it and you can't knock yourself into consciousness, you just kind of go right past it into the next stage of sleep, and your memory is kind of blank and you don't recall that. So, there are vivid dreams. There are steerable dreams. Some of the most fun I've ever had sleeping, if you will, was times that I was able to steer the whole theme of the dream. I could make things happen just by willing it. Some people do that a lot, I'm told. To me, that's a very rare characteristic of dreams.
KD2FYU.
Yes, George.
Dreams can also contain visions of future experiences that you have not achieved, and you have fragmentally put together past experiences to achieve that dream. Or dreams can also contain a lot of past, complete relevance of past, of many past experiences combined together. So, in essence, we could be dreaming of memory, or we can be dreaming of future experiences based on fragments of memory.
So you're telling me that I could be dreaming about things in the future that are yet to happen that could happen. Is that what you're saying?
No, I didn't say that.
Let me comment on it.
Well, first let me comment on that. Okay, I can't speak for George, and I'll give George an opportunity to speak for himself, as he should. I tend to think what George is meaning is that we kind of extrapolate what the future will bring, and we use past experiences as a way of kind of collaging a possible future. Personally, I do not believe in prescience. I don't think we can foretell the future. I think we can conceive of the probability of things happening down the road based upon our knowledge of situations and what's likely to occur. But I don't think we're fortune tellers personally. But first, let's have George kind of expand on what he said, and then Wesley, you can comment on all of it.
KD2FYU. From what I've learned and understood over the years, dreams are really based on memory, and also a combination of visions and desires in the future. Depending upon your life and where your mental ability has gone over the years, and your visions and desires, it can extrapolate so much amount of memory. If you're very young, the memory is less. There are less experiences of memory. So as you get older, as you dream, more of your visions contain more of your memory. When you're younger, as you dream, more of your visions contain less memory and more desire of vision. KD2FYU.
Interesting. I haven't seen any studies that kind of correlate that ratio, but I would agree with you that part of the process of sleeping is moving around, shuttling your memories. We possess memories pretty much, we understand, in three kinds of forms. We have very short-term memories that only last a day or two. We have intermediate memories that can last months. We have long-term memories where we can recall the minute details when we were 4 years old. And during sleep, one of the processes are to shift the short-term memories into intermediate and to clean up the intermediate memories. And so when it's moving memory engrams around, most likely it triggers them. In addition, you know, you always kind of go to sleep with thoughts on your mind, worries, concerns. Those things are kind of always getting processed someplace in your brain and can be triggered and merged together with random elements. You know, sometimes, occasionally, when you're lucky, if you have a problem, you can sometimes think it through at night and come up with a solution when you wake up in the morning. I'm sure people who kind of practice more sleep or something next morning. So this is a very amazing, little understood phenomena that's probably full of interesting aspects.
KD2FIU.
So you come.
Yes, George first and then Wesley, because, you know, it's just, you know, I responded to what George said, so let George respond to that.
Yeah, so what I'm finding is that either you agree or disagree, because then you were talking about CW. Because if you're talking about CW, then we can bring it into music. Learning music, not being able to learn music. Learning music rapidly or not being able to learn music rapidly. So we're talking about dreaming. Okay? So dreaming in itself has to do with memory and your ability to seek vision. And as you get older, your ability to seek vision is also responsive to your vast memory. And your memory does cloud. Your memory does shift. Your memory does not really forget, as a lot of people think. However, when you're dreaming, a lot more is coming out as you're getting older. So you dream more with a base of memory and still a combination of vision as you get older. And by the way, sleeping is good. REM is good. Quick naps, okay. But a good night's sleep is still the best. KD2FIU, and I'll let it go.
Okay, George, AC2GS. So one more comment, then I want to throw it to Wesley because he's been sitting there quietly waiting to comment. Memories can, unfortunately, be plastic. One of the worst bit of evidence at any kind of a trial is visual witnesses of the event. They get things a lot wrong. Memories are plastic. They can be very manipulated. Back in the 1990s, there was a deluge of child abuse cases at nurseries and such that were all fictitious, that were just kind of inserted in children's brains by hypnotherapists and other people. So unfortunately, memories are not always accurate. A lot of times they are, but sometimes they aren't. And I expanded on the general concept of while we sleep, a lot of things are going on in our brain, including bits and pieces of things that we're trying to learn become, you know, kind of streamlined and assimilated into our cognitive ability. So I don't want to confuse that with REM sleep. REM sleep, that doesn't have anything to do with CW. It's just that while you sleep, your learning processes do interesting things. So let me now turn to Wesley for his comment.
Roy, I can't let this go.
Okay, I thought when you said that you were going to let that go, that you were going to let that go. But okay, I understand. I said something, you want to say something in return.
KG2RY.
KD2FIU. Yeah, also it has to do with your level of IQ. A difference of an 86.6 IQ and a 146 IQ is also going to drive different memory levels. It's also going to drive different ambition levels. So, you know, we can't sit here and talk about the experiences of mind. And that's what we're trying to achieve here.
A person who dreams too much is probably obsessing his or her thoughts. KG2RY.
Negative.
Can I go?
Yeah, I just want to remind people that this is a friendly little net. We're here to inform, educate, entertain, you know, share our opinions and what we think of as knowledge. That if your heart rate increases and your blood pressure increases, you're doing this hobby wrong. So the point is to get fun out of this, not to get an ulcer. So everyone kind of take a couple of deep breaths, and Wesley, please comment.
Gary and Victor Echo 3, Quebec Uniform Reg, again, thank you to both of you. And client over to Bathurst and Wilson, Victor Echo 3, Alpha Juliet Foxtrot. Good evening, client. fog. I got a little bit later than that, and a couple other nets to go to, so here's my check-in. No traffic ward, good signal on you as usual. And back to you, V3WGK, V3HF.
Okay, so it looks like the subject got on the audience. And I think I have something to add. There was a reason when why you mentioned hypnagogia, the transition between wakefulness and the sleep. During that sleep, the comments experience visual, audio, and other types of hallucination happened. So the common experience will be muscle jerks and sleep paralysis. In 2011, I was cooperating with John KC2WGP, and I was traveling to Georgia, and after the accident that I had in the plane, when Russian were trying to assassinate me, I went through that dream many times. So it was like seeing the same action many times, but fortunately to me, many years ago, I had mandatory training on hypnosis. And that is why I think I understand the process that you travel. So, although hypnagogia is spelled hypnagogia from Latin, I believe I understand how the process works. At first, there is no way to see in the future. You cannot even foresee anything 5 minutes or 5 seconds in the future what's going to happen, but you can analyze based on the current conditions and current knowledge what may possibly happen in the future. Now, what's happening in the hypnosis, which actually the hypnagogia as a transition has something to do with it, is a hidden suggestion. Although hidden suggestion used by hypnotists in the real world, that hidden suggestion is actually a suggestion that comes from whatever you suggest yourself during your dream because of the stress that you had before. Now, based on that what I was taught, and that might look a little bit different according to modern science, because it is quite many years when I was going through that, but it was mandatory. We were explained that the brain has something like a cell, and all of the brain operation during the hypnosis is being pushed back to the cells. So the area of the brain that is normally dealing with all of the tasks is empty. So it becomes the smartest computer in the earth. Now, when the hypnotist is asking for a certain function, that empty area is pulling up from the cells the necessary information. That's why you can recall what you were doing when you were 2 years old at 3:59 p.m. Although you didn't know the clock at that time, but your brain now is operating what happened at that time. So that's the recall. And hypnotists are using that information very often to recall forgotten data. And of course, we were taught how to make the procedure. And I remember there was a joke, but one of my colleagues was very bad in one of the languages that we were needed to acquire, and he was expecting to fail on the exam. So I put him into the trance, and I told him, you're going to recall everything that you ever know about that language. And when he woke up, he went to the exam. The problem is that the post-hypnosis a stage is somewhere between 15 minutes to 45 minutes, at some people few hours until you make it deeper. And he starts to actually forget at the end of the exam, but he was able to pass. Now, why am I telling you all of that? Let me recycle. Okay, that means there is a technique known as self-hypnosis, and self-hypnosis could be compared to hypnagogia, which is not really suggested to be ever used. This is absolutely harm to the people who want to experience that, because once you're controlling somebody else, you know what you're doing, but you have to be a doctor for that. We were not. But when you're doing it to yourself, applying hidden suggestion at the trance, you're actually losing your consciousness. And then you're coming into the stage that is in between hypnagogia and that which you thought would be self-hypnosis. Because you want to recall something, or because you want to have your addiction to disappear, whatever you want. The thing is, yes, if you want to be smart for the moment, because you recall, because you can operate, because you can know, yes, that's good. But other than that, you're going to forget it as soon as you recall that. Enter Xian, Dr. Roy.
Yes, Wesley, I think Craig wanted to make a comment, and since Craig brought up the question in the first place, please, Craig, what do you have to say?
KD2OGD, it seems like maybe that, like what you mentioned before, we have so many dreams, and like the memory, like you get it versus vision, but I tend to see things like in these dreams that are like very odd, and I'm thinking, what kind of dream is this? And you did mention that we can just keep dreaming over and over. So basically an infinite dream, like a dream and a dream and a dream. And it just basically goes on forever until eventually, like, something hits you and you wake up.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George recognized. Well, you know, sometimes it seems like a dream within a dream within a dream. Sometimes it's kind of scenes. You, all of a sudden, the backdrop changes and the character of the dream changes, and they're distorted random pieces of memory, both of what you experienced and what you saw on television and movies and all kinds of things, and even imagined at some point in your life. So memories don't necessarily have to be factual. They can be artificially created. And that kind of lends itself to some comments that I'll share with you about hypnosis. But first, George, you wanted to say something.
Thank you, Roy, KD2FIU. Yeah, the composition of dreaming really has to do with the actual compilation of life experience. It becomes melded all together based on your feeling and your desire to either learn, feel, reflect, emotion. It's very complex, but it has to do with your brain farting, so to say, and your brain directing you while it's regrouping to compose you for the next day, week, whatever, or whatever feeling that you have that is going to be moving you forward. So as you get older, there are more experiences and memories that are going to go through with the dreaming that's going to make it more complex. When you're younger, it's going to also have more of your vision to what you desire to come in based on a limited amount of memory with less complexity. But dreaming, let's put it this way, it's a cycle that has many, 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 many steps. and those many, 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 many steps are going to have a certain amount of past and a certain amount of future, because your brain is going to handle that in pretty much the same way in the sleep cycles.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
Hello, Dr. Roy, and good evening, everybody. You know, I think about sleeping. Sleeping is sort of like a meditative state. When you meditate, you sit up, and when you sleep, you lay down. And the idea is to reach a place within yourself where there's no thoughts, you know, when the stress completely leaves the body, you know. So dream state and a meditative state are pretty similar. And the meditation is, I know nothing, I am nothing, I want nothing, and I'm just sitting there and meditating, and there's no dreams in the meditative state.
Seems like I went through probably a lot about this, so I think I'm pretty much pretty full here on this. So yeah, I do thank you guys for this. I kind of would like to learn a little bit more, but I got to go to bed in an hour. But yeah, thank you guys very much. It kind of helps me out a little bit, considering how this has been going on for like a week.
Okay, very good, Craig. Pleasant dreams. Don't worry about it. Dreams can't harm you. Even if you dream that you die in a dream, it doesn't kill you, unlike the way that some horror movies work. We really know very little about how the brain works in general, and including what exactly does and doesn't happen in fine details during sleep cycles. I tend to think that dreams are not really the ultimate result, a point of the effort of REM sleeping. I think it's just a mild side effect of shuttling memories back, forth, and sideways. And as I mentioned before, I think that some people have more colorful memories based upon what they've seen in movies and television than in their real life, unfortunately. And so it's a conflagration of all those things. So pleasant dreams, and I still would like to kick around with Wesley, and George, if you're interested, my little opinions about hypnosis and such.
Listen a little bit more, but at this point, I think I'm probably done here, but yeah, I guess it's more of like hypnosis, but I would certainly like to learn more about it. So, KD2OGB, and I will hand it back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Craig. This is AC2GX. Hypnosis is one of those things that people haven't fully decided on as well. I mean, there are people who are clinical hypnotherapists who absolutely positively think there's such things as hypnosis. There are other specialists in neurophysiology that doubt that. They don't think that hypnosis is actually what it's presented as, that it's just a level of say, hyper-suggestibility in some people. Now, you might flip that on its side and say, well, that's just another way of describing hypnosis, but again, some specialists do not think hypnosis as it's described is what's going on. As far as perfect memories, I tend to disagree with you, Wesley. I think that for short-term memories, if there's a lot of anxiety, you might be able to suggest to the person in a hyper-suggestible state to be less anxious, to block the access to that memory. But usually if you ask someone what they had for breakfast November 2nd, 1958, they'll most likely make it up because there's no real way of proving it. And that's unfortunately how false memories are kind of created. You can hypnotize people and discuss past lives and get very, very descriptive explanations of who they were, usually famous, important people. No one kind of tended chickens in previous lives. So false memories are very dangerous and have caused people, ruined their lives. There are people out there who really think UFO aliens probe them because of false memories.
KD2FIU?
Let me address that. The reason I mentioned hypnagogic hallucination, those hypnotic hallucinations are quite different. This is because it is hard to distinguish hallucination from reality. They create strong, intricate visual images in the mind that might be distorted in unrealistic way. As far as hypnosis, it is a human condition involving focused attention, the selective attention, selective intention, or hypothesis. Reduced peripheral awareness and the enhanced capacity to respond to suggestion. Usually the hidden suggestion is being used for it, and the only difference between the stage of the dream that we were talking about in the hypnosis is that one is intentional and one is actually not controllable. And then we talk about the dream. Let me jump. So I must agree with you. I was doing hundreds of the cases. But that was not because we wanted, but because we were told. It was a part of the training. And we were not doctors. But the thing is that we had one of the famous psychiatrists was our professor at that time, and he was paid a huge amount of money to be there. And he said that the way that we should provide the recognition between the brain trying to create unrealistic pictures of the past from the one that was needed, the real data, was that you actually ask about the condition. But that's too much for me to talk about it. That means that put the story said by the patient, or actually that was a case. We call it case. We didn't call it patient because we are not the doctors. We call it a case. Was to actually frame that story. And then by framing that story, the brain that was now that one of the smartest brains in the earth, because it didn't have any other task to do, is actually correcting itself. That was one of the techniques that we used for getting data. And to XGS.
PhD.
Yeah, first George and then Rocco. Then BHD, I'm sorry. So first George, because he wanted to talk a while ago.
Thank you, Roy. KD2FIU. There are so many things about memory. And we started with this with dreaming, and thank you, Craig, KD2OGB, for bringing this in, because it brings into memory, it brings into capacity, it brings into the ability of memory in general. And it also has to do with IQ. It has to do with how much capacity you have for recollection, immediate recollection for immediate, let's put it this way. I could remember being washed at 18 months old in a kitchen sink on a third floor flat on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn in the 1950s. I asked my mother when I was a teenager about it. Oh, I stopped doing that when you were 18 months old. She told me. I didn't know I was 18 months old. She told me I was. But I have recollection. recollections of being tossed around and washed like I was a chicken. Now, let's bring this life further. People don't understand that we have fragments coming in our memories that will bring the dreams. People, yes, most people do understand that. But what I'm getting at is dreaming, and which was the original thing that Craig brought up, has to do with our entire life and how many little bits are brought in and what we desire in life. And this all has to do with how much we remember. This all has to do with how much we don't remember. And I'll let it go, KD2FIU.
Okay, very good, George. I'll just kind of add that IQ hasn't been kind of perceived as important as it once was. It doesn't necessarily mean people have a significantly better memory. It was meant to measure people's ability, cognitive ability in general, their critical thinking, thought processes, what have you. And it doesn't really correlate, as far as I'm aware, with particularly memory or even long-term benefits. They don't correlate with, a happy and healthy life necessarily or wealth. Very often there's a completely different index called the social IQ that tends to correlate more with successfulness, and that's in a person's innate ability, not cognitive function, but social interaction with people. So, just as an aside, George, I'm not disagreeing with what you said. Jim, KD2VHD, wanted to say something.
Disagree, Roy, 146 at 20 years old.
Okay, you disagree. That's fine. You're allowed to disagree. VHD, do you want to say something?
I agree. Thanks, Roy, yes. Interesting conversation. I wanted to propose the thought, though, that all these theories or conjectures or studies or whatever don't explain the fact that the human brain slash mind is orders of magnitude more complex than science has been able to explain. Zeros and ones. And I think that we have to understand that something's going on, whatever you believe that is more complex than we realize. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Wesley recognized. We'll get to you, Wesley. I just want to put my two cents in to Jim. Science does not say that we understand, they understand how the brain works. It is very subtle, very complex. I don't think the complexity is, for the sake of complexity, is a mystery to science. I think the explanation of that complexity is a mystery to science. There are tens of billions of nerve cells in our brain. They are capable of interconnection. Some of them inhibit each other. Some activate each other. There's all different kinds of interactions between synapses and cell bodies. And so there's a heck of a lot of ability for very complex interactions in the brain. So I don't think, again, it's a mystery that it's so complex, because I think we appreciate the complexity of all the individual cells interacting in some ways that we have no clue for. But that's what science is. Little by little, we try and figure it out. If we give up at the beginning, then we would be sitting around not even with Flintstones. So I caution people to kind of give up due to complexity. Quantum mechanics is really complex, but we've gotten there, and who knows where we'll get from there. So I would say never give up, because it always pay pays to ask questions. You might actually get answers. But Wesley wanted to say something.
KG2R1.
David recognized. Wesley first, and then David.
Actually, in regards to the comment about 18 months old. Yeah, that's what we were told, that what we experienced. The group was 32 people. We were actually in the field of interrogation. We were able to understand, based on the live examples, that the brain that has a operational area free from tasks is able to take all necessary pieces of information of that 18 years old or 3 years old and form from that most probable answer for a question by interrogator. Some people don't understand what is the power of it. That's why the stage of hypnagogic hallucination is really what was interesting me to take my microphone on. So, if you tell to somebody to recall certain information, he's going to be absolutely amazingly good. There is something that is known as a post-hypnotic suggestion, and that's the stage at which you are super hyper professional in that particular area. But if your brain doesn't sense information from that particular field, it's not going to help. It is being used for scientific, some people say controversial, therapy of habits like alcoholism and smoking.
KD2OGB.
KD2FIU.
And it really works. One of the ways to deepen the very short post-hypnotic suggestion is to clap. The clap is a synonym of one of the techniques that we were using. That means in during the first stage of hypnosis, you're actually telling to the case, not the patient, to the case, that if the clap would be heard, he's going to go deep into, back into the stage, and then he can be woke up again. That makes many times more deep stage of hypnosis and longer post-hypnosis suggestion. And doing it for so many times actually makes a person so semi-dependent on hypnosis. And that's the best side of that. So what I'm saying is, yes, we don't know for sure if 3 years old at 3:56 p.m. had the dinner and he would describe what he had, but we at least were able to find out that the many cases that we could check were happened 10, 15 years ago and were checkable. That's the story. And to exchange.
KD2FIU.
George recognized, Craig recognized, David recognized. We'll get to each and every one of you, and I realize I make it worse by imposing my humble little opinion that everyone wants to refute. I understand you were trained in hypnosis, Wesley. I understand he was an aged, wise professor. Sigmund Freud was an aged, wise professor. Freudian analysis has basically been thrown away. Hypnosis continues to be questioned by some rather sophisticated studies. False memories do exist. They're well documented. Pre-life are their books filled with that nonsense. I tend to think that they're nonsense. You can retrieve some memories if you can't retrieve accurate ones, unfortunately you retrieve inaccurate ones. And if you guide the session, you can adjust the memories accordingly. But that's my opinion. I'm not saying that you should have it as well. And so I would like to kind of go down the list of all the people that are waiting to make some comment along these lines. The first person who wanted to say something after you, Wesley, is David.
So far is K2DAM.
KG2RY. Hello there. You know, I'm not a man of too many words, and I'm not a literal person. You know, I find that the truth of things is hidden and is multidimensional. And what else I want to say? I'm not linear. I don't think in straight lines. And usually, you know, what I want to say, just a few words, simple words, you know. And I guess the thought that I was having is that people tend to hold on to their obsession for dear life. The obsessions rule, you know. For some reason, they think if they lose their obsessions, then maybe they also lose their identity. Go ahead.
Well, David, that's sort of built into the concept of an obsession. An obsession is an unhealthy concentration on something that you just cannot drop. You cannot put away for a little bit of time, and it negatively affects your life. So obsessions usually are not healthy. The word use is generally connotes the fact that there's no such thing, I think, as a healthy obsession. Do you know of anything that's a healthy obsession?
Well, you know, I think that if people are obsessing, and they're obsessing and they're holding on to their obsessions, it's definitely going to affect their sleep patterns and how they feel during the day. You know, if somebody would teach them the basics of that meditation, that might help, you know, because sometimes you're in situations you can't escape the stress, and the stress is there, and the anxiety is there, and the pressure is there. So somehow you have to let go of all of that. You know, I find meditation works great.
Well, yes, David, and many other people do as well. There are a lot of proponents for meditation. There are numerous books and videos and schools that teach it. And for those people who use it and gain benefit from it, it's a very valuable thing. But like most things, it's probably not for everyone. There are some people who probably other modalities would be more beneficial for them. You know, we're talking obsession. Sometimes therapy helps. There are different types of therapeutic regimens that can be tried. So obsessions, as I said, generally is not a good thing. They are bad things, and they are things to hopefully be dealt with and to get rid of as much as you can, because they tend to degrade quality of life issues.
Well, you know, I'm under the impression there are some great spiritual teachers. I'm not talking about religious teachers, but spiritual teachers. One of them, his name is Jay Krishnamurti. He was born in England, and he set up his property in the northern part of California, a little tiny house amidst a huge orange grove. And he said that the best way to relax and to relieve yourself of pressure is to go to a place like nature, running water, mountains, streams, forest, you know?
Okay, and for some people, that no doubt would be beneficial. I am sure if I try hard enough, I can find someone who lives and dies in urban environment and is more comforted by the sound of an elevated train passing by than the chirping of any bird in the forest. So, like all things, human beings are really complex. And although We're very similar in many ways. We can be different in other ways. And so one solution does not usually lend itself to 100% of the population.
QSL, Roy, I have to say in conclusion, one thing that makes me relax a lot, that helps me relieve the stress, you know, is to go on to 20 meters or 17 meters or 15 meters or even 10 meters and have a really nice long rag chew with a DX station, you know, very nice conversation. For me, that's very relaxing. You know, you can do it on any band, in any mode, in any frequency, you know. And I think that's a really great thing for relaxation, too. KG2RY.
Well, I agree with you, David. I spent a couple hours on 10 meters today. Unfortunately, propagation was not as good this Sunday as it was last Sunday. Last Sunday, everything was open all over the place. It was lovely. Today, not so much. But again, that's us. We're ham. There are people out there that would listen to us discuss the pleasures of conversations with strangers and say, I don't get it. And that's as legitimate as our appreciation for the hobby. So again, it takes all kinds.
Question. KD2FIU.
And watching the TV with the stereo surround sound and through the AV receiver, like just putting on the football game, is also very relaxing.
D2OGB.
Okay, very good, David. Again, different strokes for different folks. The football would put me to sleep. So baseball would put me to sleep. One of the things I particularly like about the hobby that I have no clue why is that there is a large percentage of hams who don't really feel the need to discuss any sports-related information on any of the bands, which I do appreciate. But anyway, let me try to decompress because a whole bunch of people threw out their call signs, and I don't want them to feel as though they're being neglected. So the next person, as I perceive it, is Craig, and then George will follow. So Craig, your comment?
To OGB, I can't believe this whole conversation has been dragging on now for over an hour, and this seems to be probably the most popular topic for tonight. I am quite surprised at everybody here, too.
Well, Craig, you never know what's going to light people up. And what goes on in the human mind probably fascinates more humans than anything else, since we're very interested in ourselves. So I could certainly understand why the workings of the human mind are taken up and people have opinions and thoughts on it. And, you know, I think it's as legitimate as any other subject that we cover here on a weekly basis.
Basically, the sleep and dreaming, it's all about the human mind, and it's kind of completely random on what you really expect, so it really surprises me. I'm going to take myself out of the loop now. If you guys want to continue on with this conversation, feel free, because I think I am done now. So, NetControl, AC2GS, KD2OGB.
Okay, very good, Craig. George, you wanted to make a comment.
Thank you, AC2GS, KD2FIU. Yeah, it started with Craig's inquiry about dreaming. And the last thought about thoughts is that we have passion to develop, and then we want to develop aptitude to achieve within the realms of that passion. So passion and aptitude is really the biggest drive. That's the way I see it, Roy. I'll make it simple. Over to you, to AC2GS, KD2FIU.
Okay, very good, George. Very good way of summing up. Jim, KD2VHD, since you kind of set the wheel in motion for the second time. Any closing comments?
I love setting the wheel in motion. It's good. I went in a totally different direction than I thought I was going to go, but when you mentioned sports and the fact that the the perception that this group of people on the radio is not involved in that so much. I'd have to agree that I think the people that are on whatever this type of communication care less about which side of the field your balls are on and which side of the field your thoughts are on and want to know what you think. And that's why I'm here, and I like it. And thank you for giving me the time to throw my thoughts.
I have a question for you, Dr. Roy.
Yes, one second, Wesley. Jim, thank you for giving us these extra little thoughts to think about and the colorful way you describe it. I appreciate your participation. Hope you'll continue doing it here at the Technical Net. Now, Wesley, you wanted to make a comment?
I have two questions. What do you think about therapeutic suggestion and power placebo? One question, and the second, from what you said, I understand that for you, hypnosis is total BS.
Okay, I didn't quite get the first question, so I'll answer the second question, then we'll go back to the first question. I am not sure about hypnosis. I don't believe that we have a complete record of our memories and they're accessible during hypnosis. That I absolutely positively don't, because again, I've heard a lot of false memory stories, and I've heard enough stories of past lives and alien invasions that were really amounted to false memories. So there's a lot of false memories that go on in hypnosis. I am concerned with some of the specialists who doubt the veracity of hypnosis as a real thing. So for me, it's not conclusive. I'm not saying that it's BS. I'm just saying it's questionable and not completely proven. And some of the things that you cited tonight, I tend to disagree with you based upon my understanding of clinical results. You can get memories, but they are not guaranteed to be accurate. Some are, some aren't, and there's almost no way of telling unless you actually do detective work on the side. So that's my answer as best I could for your second question. If you could restate the first one, because I didn't quite understand it.
KD2FIU.
Okay, I didn't disagree with you. You're absolutely right. Brain during the hypnosis is creating some very much unusual stories. But because that brain is at a certain point of your control, you are able to actually get the real data from the brain and the forgotten information you can recall. And it's proven. Now, the question that is related to it was, what do you think about therapeutic suggestion and power of placebo? And the suggestion is the key to hypnosis and to exhibition.
Well, placebo is a very real effect. I do not know how it correlates with the suggestibility of the hypnotic trance. And again, exactly what the real details of what's going on in the brain during what we call hypnosis is. But placebo is real. It's why we do double-blind experimentations, because if you don't do double-blind, if you just hand people water, a good percentage of them will get a benefit. I remember injecting a drug addict with salt water in a hospital when I was an intern, and they wanted ridiculous quantities of pain relief medication, and the guy was very benefited from the salt water injection. So that's an indication of placebo. Now, you know, doctors can't kind of do that outside of hospitals, because you can't just write a prescription for a placebo. But I think a lot of times people benefit from the placebo effect. Now, as long as the placebo is benign and doesn't harm in any way, either from the absence of something that might cure the disorder, then the placebo effect is fine by me.
So actually you agree that therapeutic suggestion is a placebo. It helps at some cases, not all of the cases, but it does help by waking up a certain mechanism that were unexpected to be awakened. Hypnosis is based on hidden suggestion. The trait suggestion is something is beautiful, something is wonderful. The hidden suggestion is you're not telling the fat guy that he's fat, but you're telling him the story that you were in the park and you saw those amazing guys, and you talked to them, and they were so happy and whatsoever, and they lose the weight and what. And then the person, instead of being unhappy from your criticism, thinks, how about if I try? Data actually correlate with therapeutic suggestion and with the placebo. The power of suggestion is enormous, and that's what makes the person get into the trance. So we're not denying that there is a certain procedure to get person into the into the hypnosis, although 3% of the people, including me, are completely immune to hypnosis. They are not suggestive enough, I assume. So, we may say that a certain phenomena in hypnosis are not realistic. They didn't happen. They were invented by the brain. But the process happened. So what is that you didn't like? And to actually...
The underlying theory and details of hypnosis are up to question, as far as I'm aware. The same people do not question that there is a state of hypersuggestibility that some people can be brought into, where you can suggest all kinds of interesting things. So maybe it's a more of a semantical argument than not, but I just want to caution people. And again, the idea that it's an open gateway for a photographic memory is not an accurate assessment as far as I'm aware. You could suggest things. Some things are useful. Habits might be modified, lessened to a degree. Pain perception might be lessened to a degree. Again, if you can cure the actual thing rather than papering it up with a placebo effect, that's preferable. But otherwise, I agree with you that it is a legitimate thing for therapists to try along with other modalities.
I would add the description of suggestion for easy understanding of what I'm talking about. So suggestion is a psychological process by which the person gives his or her own or another person desired thoughts, feelings, and behaviors by giving stimuli that might elicit them as reflexes instead of relying on conscious effort. And that's the definition of it. Thank you very much for participating and letting me talk.
You're welcome, Wesley. Now let's hear from George. I give you the final comment from this discussion, then we'll move on because it's been more than an hour.
Thank you, Roy. AC2GS, KD2FIU. I believe that when we're talking about this whole topic here, it's a matter of whether you're drifting in and out of consciousness. There's no factors that are going to make you be able to dream. It's all on your own. The lethargic factors that occur have to do with your own mind, your own body, and the way it feels at the time, and whether or not you're going to drift in and out of consciousness. And the level of consciousness is on your own mind. Thank you, Roy. KD2FIU.
Thank you, George. And before we completely leave this, I'm not going to say anything that requires rebuttal. Just for you guys into the English language, we've been talking about hypnagogia, It's the transition state between consciousness between the wakeful state and sleep. The opposite, the transition state between sleep and waking up is called hypnopompia, if anyone out there is interested. So anyway, thanks everyone for discussing and tossing this around. I enjoyed it. I hope people listening did too. David, KG2RY, you're next on the list of questions. David, the KG2RY, you had a question tonight? I guess David stepped away from the radio for a moment. We'll try him again soon. Next on my list for tonight, Wesley, N2XJN, you had a question for tonight?
Yeah, I sent you email. That email was about terahertz versus infrared. I don't know if you had a chance to see it.
Yes, I saw it. It was a classroom video. I guess for a classroom video, it was okay. Place looked a little cluttered. Professor was walking around with a hat. He looked like Indiana Jones. Terahertz signals penetrate different things than infrared signals.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to the frame exactly. Yes, okay. Hold on, I almost heard it. Okay, so the infrared. We have a glass paper, cardboard foam, and bandage. So I wanted to have a sort of puzzle, as a sort of a puzzle. And we have infrared radiation, which is electromagnetic radiation, but we have a terahertz radiation too, which is a much lower frequency than infrared. So in visible spectrum, we have extra low frequency, HF, HF, and then we have, we're going further to terahertz, infrared, and then visible light, then ultraviolet, then would be X-rays, and that would be gammas. All of them are electromagnetic waves. And of course, when I was young, about 12 years old, I was asking myself what beta particles can go through, what alpha particles can go through, what gamma ray can go through, and then getting into the point where I found that neutrons are not electromagnetic waves, but I was young, and they can penetrate so much. So, question. If we have a terahertz radiation, we have a glass, paper, cardboard, foam, and bandage. Which one of them does not allow terahertz radiation to go through and to exit?
Well, I forget exactly what the results were. I know that they're different than infrared. I know that the foam was pretty porous for terahertz. I'm thinking the cardboard was mildly absorptive.
Okay. Anybody from the audience? We have a glass. We have a paper. We have a cardboard. We have a foam. And we have a bandage. And we're asking, terahertz radiation. Which of the materials terahertz radiation, electromagnetic radiation, cannot go through? So let's go to infrared. We have a glass, paper, cardboard, foam, bandage. Infrared radiation. Which one of those infrared cannot go through?
copy, Dr. Roy.
Well, what do you want, Wesley? You saw the video. I mean, I forget the details of the video. I just remember that there are, like all things, different materials have different characteristics. They have different energy levels for the electrons that interact, that make the difference between some material being transparent, translucent, or absorbent.
How about visible light? Can visible light go through the glass, Dr. Roy?
Well, it depends on the glass, but if the glass is the usual transparent type, by definition, it's transparent. It will block infrared, but it will allow visible light.
How about infrared?
No, as I mentioned before, it blocks infrared. You need special material to be transparent at infrared. That's why, that's how greenhouses sort of work. They lock in the heat and they don't allow the infrared to be emitted out.
That is correct. There is a special film that is coated on the glass that allows infrared to pass through. But it is coated from inside, not from outside. Radiation. What do you think? Glass?
I would guess that it's opaque to glass.
No, it is not. Paper. Visible light. Infrared terahertz. Dr. Roy.
WS2N.
Football.
Go ahead.
Years ago, I remember Dick made a big thing out of not calling this radiation, any of this stuff, and any RF frequency. So I'm just bringing that out. When you're talking about radiation, then you're talking about protons or electrons or ions shooting through something. Not electromagnetic waves. Back over to you, Roy.
KD2FIU.
George recognized, but let me just put in my two cents. Yeah, the problem is not one of semantics. It's more of public relations. People have been imbued with this sense that the concept of radiation is dangerous because one of the many forms of radiant energy is nuclear decay, so nuclear radiation. So they kind of decided that they hated the whole word. That's why nuclear magnetic resonance was renamed magnetic resonance imaging to get out this, from under the nuclear bugaboo. So, although, as far as I'm concerned, radiation is a reasonable semantic choice, it can be misinterpreted by the lay public into something more dangerous. Electromagnetic waves are a form of radiation. They are a propagation of waves. As long as they are non-ionizing, which means they're slower than ultraviolet, they do not hazard much of a risk for human beings other than electrical burns and or local heating of the area. I think George wanted to say something.
Thank you, Roy. AC2GS, KD2FIU. And just for a quick definition on what we're talking about with glass, let's go back to vitreous composition and then get a better understanding with what it can block, what it cannot block, that being sand, as the Romans melted sand to make glass. And I'm saying that because we just see glass as something that is totally translucent, but it is not. It is still a topical surface of the earth that we have remanufactured. So If glass can do something and glass can do not, I'm saying this for people who are listening right now, glass is not just something that you see through. KD2FIU, thank you, Roy.
Okay, George, thank you. This is AC2GS, by the way. Glass is a kind of really generalized term for things that contain silicon dioxide and almost anything else. There are many types of glass with many types of optical qualities, different refractive indexes, different absorption. There are fluoride glasses. There's all kinds of glasses. And as George mentioned, glass goes back a long, long ways.